Hi, welcome to the Arnold Furious, that's me, .com podcast featuring Akil.
That's me.
Excellent. And we're here to discuss year-end stuff because the year has ended.
That sounded so ominous.
The year has ended. The year is over. It is the first of the new year.
Is the first of the new decade.
Yes, but we're not going to do of the decade stuff because I really wasn't around for all of it. So we're just going to kind of do a best of 2019 thing.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last time. We're not going to do a full awards because neither of us have really watched a huge amount of stuff this year.
I mean,
So we're just.
I have ideas about pretty much every award going, but we're going to kind of focus on the bigs.
Yeah. And also, who cares about tag team of the year?
Best weekly TV show.
Who gives a shit?
Who was best on interviews, Akil?
It was John Franklin Jr.
So, do you want to start with the match or the wrestler? I think we do wrestler because that will probably lead into a lot of match discussion.
Yeah, I think let's do it like that.
Okay. So, wrestler of the year is Will Ospreay.
Yeah, there's no.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of other people that are fighting for second, but it's really, really difficult to argue with Ospreay this year. Just from a pure, just the amount of matches that he had, just the quantity is something that's almost unheard of in high-level New Japan, where most of the time you have juniors that their year ends around Best of Super Juniors. You have
I'm going to
heavyweights.
stop you there because the recorder's stopped for some reason.
Weird.
Why has it done that? Why are you being weird, recorder? You normally record. It's your job.
I thought you were going to call me out on the juniors, their year ends in
It's just
Super
not.
Junior Tag League. That's really important.
I usually have a little update on it. Okay, no, it's fine. Try and carry on. I'll edit that out.
Okay, so I think with Ospreay, he's had a really interesting year, which you don't see quite often in high level New Japan. Most of the time, you've got juniors, their year basically ends around the end of Super Juniors. They don't really do anything after that.
Yeah.
You've got heavyweights who sort of have Wrestle Kingdom, maybe New Japan Cup, and then sort of take the rest of the year up until the G1 off. And then you've got Will Ospreay, who's sort of done everything. And I can't remember the last time, if ever, there's been someone that's worked basically every tournament in New Japan.
I think they did it as like a gimmicky thing, but he has absolutely smashed like every single part of it.
Yeah, he has an amazing Best of Super Juniors. He absolutely killed it in New Japan Cup. He had a great G1. The Super J Cup, a show, a tournament which literally no one watched. He had just went out there and had these amazing blowaway matches.
Yeah,
The red,
I didn't see that.
no,
I
the.
saw Southern Showdown where he wrestled in like the Australia that like 2 day Australia tour, and he
Yeah.
had a legitimate 4.5 star match with Robbie Eagles that nobody gave a shit about and probably nobody saw, but it was a really, really great match.
Yeah, because he loves. The thing about Will is when he really likes someone, he will go out of their way, out of his way to have a great match with them. I don't think that's something you can. I think most wrestlers are the same, but not they're not having the level of matches with people that
Yeah,
Will
a
ends up
lot
having.
of matches. Well, sorry, a lot of wrestlers when they have a like a favored opponent or a favored person, they will go out of their way to try and have the best match they possibly can, but they're not Will Ospreay. So no. Will Ospreay, when he goes out of his way to have like a really good match with someone, be it like Robbie Eagles or Amazing Red or whoever, he really goes out of his way to have a good match, and it's ridiculously good. Like his floor is ridiculously high. I don't think I've seen him have like anything approaching a bad match all year. And when he does really go for it, the results are spectacular.
I disliked the Red match a little bit just because I think Will was a bit too much of a mark for Red and didn't fully understand the situation. Red, yes, he's a veteran, but because he's a little bit older, he shouldn't be completely taking you to task in the match, where the entire match was basically just Will selling for Red. And I think you have to sort of, yes, you really like this man and this is a dream match for you, but you also have to properly contextualize everything.
Yeah, I didn't see that match, so I don't have a frame of reference for it.
It was still ended up being a really good match, but I think that's one of the slight issues I've had with Will's year.
It's weird though, because like he kind of sells himself now as this veteran, experienced competitor who can modify himself to suit whoever he's appearing against, whether that's like Ray Phoenix or Dan Maloney. Like he will change his game to suit his opponent. So it's really weird that he didn't feel like he could do that against a veteran. I guess it's just the respect that he's got for him that made him do that. But you look at everyone else he wrestles against, even Okada, who he really looks up to Okada. When they wrestle each other, he's wrestling to Okada's strengths to make him look better. And yeah, it's weird that would happen.
Yeah, I think it's a case of he misunderstood what Red's strengths were in 2019. He always felt like he was wrestling Red in 2002, 2003. That's the kind of Red he was trying to pull out, whereas that's not the Red we have right now. And so you need to adapt the match a little bit. The Dan Maloney match basically made Dan Maloney.
Yeah. I mean, people really wanted him to succeed. So when Maloney came back, I guess it was the first show in January that Fight Club ran.
No. It was the 100 weekend because he had a six-man with Mustache Mountain on that 100 show, I remember. So end of last year. Okay. End of last year.
Must be getting my dates mixed up. But yeah, so he came back right at the end of last year then.
Yeah.
So he was very popular. But then when he had that Ospreay match, which was a DTTI weekend, that just completely changed perception of him. And he's just gone on from there to be like one of the main guys in the UK scene. And that's off the back of the Ospreay match. And I know Will hasn't wrestled a lot in the UK, but when he has, he's made people. And that's, I think he wants to carry on doing that going forward. So like in 2020, when he comes over, he's going to be over here to make like young wrestlers look better. And it's that kind of selfless, you know what I mean? It's that kind of approach to wrestling that is what you need from someone. He doesn't really have that much of an ego, which is weird because like his Twitter is terrible.
Although it's very clear he's tried to stop that this year.
Yeah.
It's very, very clear what's happened is New Japan are pushing him seriously now. And he's finally mature enough to realize, look, I just need to
be a bit more careful. I'm sure he said that in a tweet, that he felt he needed to grow up more and just be more mature and that he deserved the abuse that he got. And it was like, oh, okay. he's more self-aware.
Yeah, I think I know people like this who will sort of say stuff like that but not really act on it. And I'm surprised that Will was actually acted on it and gone, no, I'm going to calm down a bit.
Yeah, he just wants to be a better example for everyone. And it's a hell of a turnaround. But he's finally got the persona to match the ability, which we've all been just begging out for this to happen for like what, 3 years, 4 years, and it's there now. And New Japan are serious about him. He's moved to Japan, like he's just their guy now. So at some point, he's going to be your IWGP champion.
He's clearly, just looking at the booking, he's clearly being made, he's being groomed to be the next top gaijin. I don't know if he would be above Jay White or not.
I think he will be, yeah. The thing with when Kenny Omega left, he left before they were ready to replace him. So they had to kind of shoehorn somebody in there, and that someone was Jay White because he was there. And if they kind of had him to a level where they were quite happy with his work, so they were like, well, we're going to put him in there, but the long-term replacement is Ospreay.
Yeah,
and so long term, Ospreay is going to be a much bigger deal than Jay White, because he is just an all round a better wrestler.
Yeah, I haven't liked, last time we talked about Jay White, I think was around WrestleMania weekend, where he had that awful, awful match with Okada, or a match I hated. I've started to turn around on Jay White quite a bit. He's not someone I think is worth talking about for Wrestler of the Year or anything.
No, not at all.
Because
I think he had a pretty bad G1. He had a terrible match with Naito.
The Ibushi match was great, though. I really, really liked the Ibushi match.
Yeah, that's fair. That's like that. If that Jay White turned up more often, he'd have a better reputation.
Yeah, I think the issue with Jay White is that he has a weird tendency to almost choke in big situations. He works, most of his best matches are on like smaller B shows, not the Wrestle Kingdoms, the G1 final, although the Ibushi match was the G1 final, MSG match, whatever. Those sort of big, big situations, he doesn't show out as much as I would like.
Yeah, he's a bit unpredictable. But I think a lot of that is also based on the booking and what they tell him to do, because they're basically using him as an opponent for other people. So it's like the other person is the important one, and he's just kind of been shoehorned into that spot, basically because Kenny Omega left. And he wouldn't be at that level if it wasn't for Omega, because I don't think he's really ready for these big main event slots that he's getting. But we'll see how he does in 2020. Like I say, he's not anywhere near Wrestler of the Year chatter for me. Ospreay was very far ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, I think there's one or two other black marks on Will Ospreay's run. Most notably, obviously, the David Starr match, which you walked out of.
Yeah, that was 100% booking.
Okay, fine. I think it's still an issue of his year. Not his fault,
that match,
I accept.
Up to the point where all of the shitty booking kicked in at the end, that match was the European match of the year. It was hands down the best match I'd seen in Europe by a long distance. And then the booking kicked in and just ruined it.
Right. Fair. I still haven't seen the match, so I can't say too much.
The first like half an hour of that match is absolutely sensational. If you watch like the first half an hour, and then before they start into the ref bumps and all the overbooking, if you stop the match at that point, you'd be like, this is five stars easily. Like, how is this match got such a bad reputation? It's so good. And then it just completely goes off a cliff at the end. None of that's on Ospreay. None of it at all.
Right. The other thing, and this feels insane to say, but I think he's slowed down a little bit towards the end of this year. I would generally say around the Star match is where things, because that was post G1. He had a really good Super Juniors with Robbie Eagles, but it wasn't super duper high level.
I would agree with the slowing down. I think the last real genuine match of the year contender he had was his last match in G1 against Hiroshi Tanahashi. I don't think he's had a match since then that was at that level. They've also been more spaced out, so you don't get these big clusters of great matches all in a close period like you did with Best of the Super Juniors leading into Dominion, like you had with his G1 run. And yeah, they've been a bit more spread out. I also haven't seen as much New Japan since like King of Pro Wrestling. I think I've watched like one show.
Yeah, I think there was a tag on one of these Road to Tokyo Domes, which was supposed to be quite good. I think it just comes down to how much do you value those first, what, 8-9 months of the year?
Well, I had him absolutely locked down as Wrestler of the Year before G1 started.
Right.
I don't think anyone was close to him at that point. He had, I would say, six, maybe four. Let's say four matches in the G1 that I thought were absolute bangers. And six that I put on my shortlist for, like, the best matches that he's had this year. So that kind of put him over the edge. And like, there's no catching him at that point. There's nobody near to him.
That's fair. Moving on a little bit, there's someone I don't feel like gets enough talk who's got a very comparable year to Will Ospreay, and that's Shingo.
Yeah.
I think we talk about, you know, Will's done all of these tournaments and everything, but Shingo is right there with him for most, if not all of it. I think the only difference is Shingo didn't work New Japan Cup. But beyond that, they were basically neck and neck for a lot of it. Will's best match was with Shingo.
I think it's, yeah, I'm going to say yes on that. But also, I think the Dragon Lee one is very close. I think those are the two that I've got as like Will's best matches.
I will accept that. I think the Shingo one just edges it out a little bit, but like I can't argue a huge amount. Shingo also did he worked a little bit outside of New Japan this year, didn't he? Am I mixing that up with last year? He definitely did. I think there's a couple random matches where you could at least say, look, most of everything Will's done on a high level has been in New Japan, where Shingo's got a little bit more high level stuff outside of New Japan.
Yeah, I don't remember anything because he kind of signed with them and that was it, right? I mean,
maybe I've made that up. Maybe I'm mixing it up with last year then.
He did Champion Carnival, but that wasn't this year, was it?
That was last year, yeah.
That was 2018. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because
got your years mixed up. Yeah, so he was in Champion Carnival in 2018 and he was still in Dragon Gate. And then he left Dragon Gate sort of end of October. And then he was in New Japan at the end of 2018. So yeah, 2018, he was kind of in other promotions. 2019, he's very much been New Japan guy.
Right. In that case, that point, pointless. But I think the bigger idea is he's done a lot of the same stuff Will has.
Yeah.
And has the same highs.
Yeah, I think he has less highs, and that's probably why he's a distant second for like the best wrestler out of New Japan this year. He did Best of the Super Juniors. He had some really good matches in that tournament. Obviously, the final with Ospreay being an absolute standout. And he was in G1, and he was very good in G1. Since then, I think he's had like two singles matches.
He's tailed off a lot more than Will has. Sorry.
Yeah, he had like Goto in the Destruction show and Toa Hanare on a Road to show somewhere. Yeah, that's not an awful lot of high profile matches when you compare it to the number that Ospreay has had over the same year. He's had very few singles opportunities, and I think that's been deliberate because they know how good he is. They don't need to throw him out there all the time. They had him peak with the Best of the Super Juniors, obviously lost the final. Then they gave him the G1, which I think was the other big Shingo deal this year, and he's not really done a lot else that's massively high profile. But he's been very good.
He's been very good. He had the official move to heavyweight this year as well, which I think most people were expecting was going to happen with Will.
Yeah. Will is basically a heavyweight now, but they just haven't said it.
I think it's just a case that the junior division needs an ace right now while Hiromu was away.
Yeah. Well, with Hiromu being back, I think it's likely that he'll just move up there.
Yeah. Who else do we have? I think most people's number two, or probably in argument for number one, would be David Starr.
Mine's Kento Miyahara, but we can talk David Starr as well.
It's up to you. We can do either. I've got some stuff to say about Kento, but most of what I saw of Kento came from the Champions Carnival.
Yeah. He did have a very strong Champion Carnival. He's also been basically the guy for New Japan for All Japan. I immediately realised my mistake. Yeah, he's been their guy for pretty much the entire year. He's carried the company forward. He's had phenomenal matches with an assortment of their undercard guys. So he had this incredible match with Kai back in January, Wrestle Kingdom weekend. But that was for the Triple Crown. That was probably the best Kai singles match I've ever seen. He then had a great match with Suwama in February. And after that, he basically turned his attention to promoting the next generation of talent in All Japan. So he had the great match with Nomura in March. Then the Champion Carnival. So they actually had him win the Carnival as champion, which doesn't happen, but they felt the need to do that just to stress how great he is
and really solidify him as their ace.
Yeah, and he's continued to be their ace for the rest of the year. So he the only time he's lost was the Royal Road tournament, where they felt the need to actually put Jake Lee over for once, because Jake Lee lost in the final of Champion Carnival to Kento in a really good match. And then they did it again for Royal Road, just to stress that Jake Lee, up-and-comer, is the next guy they feel is going to be ready to challenge. And then they had him lose the title match sort of in October. But the whole year has been about building up the likes of Jake Lee and Noa Nomura. And they kind of have the basis there for, like, the pillars, like they did in the 90s. So they have... They have a pretty strong three pillars, and they just kind of need a fourth guy to come through and just then they'll be doing great. And I think they've had a really good year. They've had a good use of just random talents. Like Zeus, obviously, is great. He's had a bit of a down year by his standards, but had a great match with Kento in Champion Carnival. Had another one against him in. For the title in over the summer. Yoshitatsu has been in those main events and hasn't looked out of place. I think who else?
Yuji Okabayashi.
Yes, he's fantastic in Champion Carnival. Shuji Ishikawa as well. So they've done very well at utilizing talents from outside the promotion, but also taking the ones that they've got and making the best of them. And it's all been centered around Kento. So they've had an entire year of Kento to build the company up underneath him. And I can't think of many other promotions that have one guy that's that important to them that Kento Miyahara is to All Japan. Even where you've got other promotions where they have an ace, like say Ishino in Wrestle One, there's other guys that are kind of taking it in turns to be the top guy. Even when Kento didn't have the belt, even when he dropped it to Zeus in like 2018, he was still the guy. And they've very deliberately built the company up around him. And All Japan is starting to thrive again now, and it's all because of him. So that's why he has such a strong case for me for Wrestler of the Year. I don't think he has the volume of matches that Ospreay has at that very top tippy top level, but that's simply because All Japan don't have that many shows where they can put those big title matches on. He's had a load of big title matches this year. He's had like 8, which is a lot.
Sure. When I think of Kento, I always think of like 2016 and 2017 as being his sort of big years. How does his 2019 compare to those years?
I think not only is it as good as those years, I think it's better. I'm not convinced he's had a match that is just, you just look at it and go, that's Kento Miyahara's best match ever. I don't think that's happened this year. But he's had a lot of matches that are very, very close. I could probably argue the Nomura match, maybe, as a contender for that. But yeah, he's just been so great. Ayagi's the other guy who's going to be the fourth pillar. I was searching for the back of my head for his name. Couldn't remember. Yumi Ayagi's going to be like the fourth pillar.
I think I saw a bit of him in. Did he work Champions Carnival this year? Clearly, I've got Carnivals mixed up.
Yeah.
I think I saw a bit of him in the Carnival this year, and he's like
kind of on the cusp. So he's like the next one that will get up to that level. But it's all been about Miyahara building all these guys up. Like without Miyahara, they've got nobody to bounce off. Like he's been the reason why All Japan has improved as much as it has. So that's why I had him at number 2.
I think that's quite a valuable thing when talking about Wrestler of the Year, just how important you are to the promotion, to your home promotion. I think
they've done a good job over the last couple of years of building the promotion up. So if you took him away, it wouldn't be a disaster, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good as it has been.
But they've only been able to build up the promotion because they had him.
Yes.
To center everything around.
I mean, they were really, really, truly. When Suwama got injured, I'm trying to remember what year it was. I guess it was 2016.
It was January 2016, I remember.
So that's the point at which they were like, well, we're going to put the belt on you because we don't have anyone else. What a decision that was.
Yeah. And like I said, that's the year I think of as sort of Miyahara's big breakout year.
But he's even better than the one.
So I remember, again, all I've seen of All Japan this year is the Champions Carnival. And I remember having this conversation with you around the time because I was picking and choosing and I thought, you know what, Kento's doing really well, but he's not peaking as high as, say, a Nakabayashi or a Ishikawa or a Zeus.
He spent most of that tournament making other people look better and then won it.
was your exact point. And also that he's having these high level matches on like spot shows, whereas these other guys are only showing out on like the final couple nights.
He quite often he main evented like the tour shows when he wasn't having a carnival match. Because they were like, well, we got to finish strong. We don't have a particularly strong lineup for this show, so let's put Kento in the main event in the tag. And that was the main event. That's how important he is to that promotion.
Yeah, I think he's a guy I haven't really seen a huge amount of talk on for Wrestler of the Year, so I like that we've got a chance to talk about him. Someone that has got a lot of talk is David Starr.
Yes.
His year is really, really interesting. I think, obviously, he's got the incredible OTT run. He's got a pretty good progress run, considering where that promotion is.
Yeah, there were some matches over the summer that were like genuinely really good. His strong style, I thought, was really good, especially the final with Devlin.
Yeah.
And they had the tag stuff with... when he was tagging with OJMO against Volta and Irie.
Yep, that was really good.
That was really good. So, yeah, he's had a pretty solid year for progress, although they haven't used him very often. Just really weird.
Yeah, I think he's a very in-demand wrestler and they just can't get the dates on him that they needed.
I mean, he got himself over.
100%. I think he completely changed the course of his career with that first We the Independent promo before Strong Style. I think he was a guy that was very, very over and was well liked in most every company. But that one promo sort of catapulted him into maybe the biggest star in this country.
Well, the reaction that you got when he came out night one, I was like, wow. Like, people were literally giving this standing ovation just for walking out there on night one. So that the difference between that and the reaction that every other wrestler got in that tournament was like night and day. So I'm not sure who was originally booked to win, but it wasn't Star.
I think if you look at the way certain people have been booked between Strong Style and Ali Pali, you can maybe sort of figure out who was supposed to win. I have my own theories. I don't know if it's worth talking about, but I think just based on the fact that he worked every show and worked high-level matches, I think it seems like Devlin was supposed to win.
That would be my pick, yeah.
I don't have any inside information or anything about it. I think just the fact that he was in that final, Star himself has come out and said the decision of who was going to win was made literally day of the final. I think also the fact that Devlin was having these big sort of showcase matches.
Yeah, he had that match with Kyle Fletcher that was like the best match of the tournament before the final.
Yeah, but even after Strong Style, he was having like the Ilya match, for example. I think there was a Walter match he had. There were matches which were clearly meant to be like, look, we're giving Devlin these big matches, and he didn't really have an angle going around him. If you say maybe he was supposed to win Strong Style, then those big showcase matches make a bit more sense. But obviously that's just conjecture. But more so, let's go back to talking about Star. I think even outside of his stuff in this country, which, like, we've talked about the OTT stuff, and it might be some of the best stuff. You know what? I would go as far as to say the Devlin Star Walter stuff might be some of the best stuff that's been produced by the UK ever. I would go that far.
The British Isles.
British Isles. Yes.
Let's be careful with that one.
Sorry, Jamesy.
Yeah, they did outstanding work, and it wasn't just the storytelling. It was just the details that they went into, the depth that they went into with the promo videos and the interviews and everything. Is just the complete package of the entire year of what they did together was almost flawless.
And the fact that they were able to make Devlin, who was sort of the purest white meat babyface possible for that promotion, to be able to turn him heel and do it in such a subtle way is really, really impressive. You could have had him come out and do a proper turn and, you know, kick someone in the dick or whatever. But you didn't do that. You told a really interesting story about how maybe the fans have turned heel on him. As opposed to, you know, there's some interesting themes going on there. And it's just phenomenal. And I think Star was a very, very important part of that whole angle. I think he was the bridge of that angle.
I think without his promos, without his interviews especially, I don't think it would have gotten to the level it got to.
No chance.
And his turn in the first place on Devlin was like the point at which the storyline got really, really interesting. Like before that, it wasn't a three-way storyline. It was very much Devlin trying to overcome the monster that was Volta. But that just kind of added another little wrinkle to it. And then from there, it went to a whole other level.
Yeah, I think the Devlin Walter story was itself really, really good. But then this added wrinkle of Star and his past with Walter, his future with Devlin. It was a great, great angle, which still might be ongoing.
It did feel like
Even the.
they kind of peaked with that Star Devlin match in October. It felt like that was a natural conclusion to everything.
Yeah, but I think it's not impossible to think Devlin's coming back at some point. And if he comes back, he has to have some kind of interaction with Star. So I'm not convinced the story is completely done, but I think we're at a very natural end of chapter for a while.
Yeah, I don't think
But.
they might do it to it'll probably be more of a one-off match, I would have said, as opposed to how this has felt like a logical progression of one match to the next, one match to the next, and like to get to where we've got to. Whereas from now on, it's the only thing I can think that they'd consider doing maybe a Star and Volta again, but then I'm not sure they'd want to do that.
I think it could get messy politically.
Yeah, so I think they're better off just moving forward now and trying something else. But it's been a phenomenal series.
Yeah. Even outside of those, Star has he had some good stuff in WXW this year.
Yeah, I feel like WXW, they kind of used him when they needed him. So they had. I love the match with Volta at Strong Style.
Carrot.
Yeah, sorry, we just talked about progress, and we have sort of gone. Yeah. Carrot Weekend. I love that he lost again. It felt so perfect because everyone had been built up to think this is it. Star finally beats Volta. Star finally gets the win over Volta. Lost again. That was great. And then they just kind of drafted him back in after that when they needed him. So it's usually been against like Ilya, or he's wrestled Thatcher as well.
There was the WrestleMania weekend match against, I want to say, Lucky Kid.
It was Lucky Kid. That was great as well.
Yeah, Lucky's not a guy I generally like all that much, but Star really pulled something out from him.
Lucky is a very good hand. So like if you are a good wrestler, he's very easy to work with, and he can keep up with just about anyone. But like on his own, he's a little hard to book around.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, Star, on the other hand, is legitimately like, if you're a promotion and you want somebody you can just give the ball to, it's David Star, because his promos are great, his in-ring's great, he's on top of the world. Just you can't really do any better at the moment, unless you're looking at, I don't know, fucking AJ Styles of 2 years ago, or Kenny Omega of 2018. He's operating at that sort of level where if you can get him, then get him, because he will deliver for you.
Yeah, and there's three or four companies now sort of built around him. Obviously, OTT, obviously, Rev Pro was up until he left. Progress
I
was,
assume he's
but.
coming back, but it's I don't know if it's they're struggling to get dates out of him.
I think what's happened is that he sort of really. Either he sort of realized or Andy sort of realized that they need a bit of a break from him because he was on literally every show and the angle they were running with him sort of had reached a very natural conclusion. And it's the kind of angle where you can't just
I
end it and
would have
then, like, a
been
month
happier with
later.
him winning. I felt that him winning was the more interesting route to take, where they could actually just put him in charge of the company. But
I think.
that's why I'm thinking it might be like dates are more of an issue than the booking, or maybe they just didn't want to go that way. But it would have been more interesting, I think. would have been shook things up for RevPro, who've been fantastically boring without him.
Yeah, they lost him at the absolute worst possible time. Whatever happened, it was an awful time, because now that company has no one, really.
Yeah, they're trying to build from scratch, building from scratch is hard. It's the hardest thing you can do. You need somebody on top that you can build from, usually, although not necessarily beating the champ, as it were, to get yourself over, but just having those high tier matches with them, like they're doing in All Japan with Kento. You need somebody like that to build around. Otherwise, it's just two guys wrestling each other, two new guys, you know, and it might be a good match, but like nobody's really going to get over to the same degree. And that has been true in all of wrestling history, going back to the start. If you're just starting from scratch, it's almost impossible to get over.
Yeah. There's a couple other guys I wanted to talk about, but I'm just a bit aware of the time and the fact that we've only talked about one thing so far.
Yeah.
I will just quickly mention, I think Devlin has had a very, very strong year.
Yeah.
The Volta stuff, the Star stuff. He's been the linchpin of NXT UK. Whatever value you put into that.
His in-ring standard has been incredibly high this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've seen him in a match less than very good. Who else? I think that's basically it. I think Volta has had a better year than people might realize. Just because with the weird NXT UK stuff, there's nothing interesting going on there, but every time he's gone somewhere else, it's been really, really good. He had that BJW tag match we talked about last episode. He had the Phoenix match from Carrot, which is phenomenal and might be my favourite Phoenix match for quite some time. There's other stuff I can't remember now off the top of my head. Obviously, the Star Devlin stuff. He had a bunch of bangers in progress. His year is clouded by NXT UK, but I think when you actually look at his non-NXT UK stuff, you could make an argument for him to still be one of the best in the world.
Yeah, I think it's just his work has been really good. Like, if you watch him wrestle, his technique is just great.
Yeah.
It's worth giving a shout out to, like, the likes of Okada and Ishii, who have had very good years, but because Ospreay's is so good, it's kind of hard to build a case for anyone else from New Japan. But they have had very good years.
They have had good years. I think those are basically the only two. I think we've talked about all of the top-end New Japan guys. Ibushi's had a very good year as well. But again, it's difficult to really make a case for a New Japan guy that's not Will Ospreay.
Yeah. That's my take on it. I mean, you can look at you can put a list of best matches together for Okada, and it's probably going to be longer than Jordan Devlin's list, but he just hasn't been like as important to his promotion as he has been in previous years.
Yeah.
And I think the promotion has actually suffered because of that, because they've tried to spread the load around a bit, and some of the people they've tried to spread the load onto have not really been good enough to be there. I'm thinking like Jay White, Sonata, Naito at times has been very disappointing.
Yeah, I think outside of the Ibushi matches, there's not a huge amount to Naito's year.
No, not at all. So should we go on to match of the year?
Yeah, let's do that. I've got a list of about half a dozen matches to a dozen matches worth talking about.
So what's your number one?
Has to be Ospreay Shingo.
Yeah, that is my number one. I would kind of undenied about that, or the Dragon Lee match from Dominion that was like a week later. So he had basically my two favourite matches of the year in the space of a week.
Yeah. What a crazy year.
Yeah, the Shingo one, I think, for me is the better of the two. The standard of work in that, and just the hard-hitting nature of it, the speed of everything was just unreal.
It's the intensity. The intensity I really blew me away.
I think it's just, it's a combination of the two, because I always like, I like intensity in my matches and I like them to be fast paced. When you have both of those together, then it's just, it's the perfect storm.
Yeah, absolutely great. It was the icing on the cake of Ospreay's incredible year. A match I want to talk about, which I don't remember if we did, was Cody Dustin Rhodes from AEW All Out.
I'm sure we talked about it at the time.
Yeah, I imagine we did, but I don't remember. I remember off the top of my head. If you know me, you know I like bloody gruesome matches. To put it bluntly,
every time you recommend me a match, somebody's just gushing blood all over the place.
yeah, it's great. And I think this was the best mainstream example of that this year. And they don't, it's not bloodletting for the sake of bloodletting. There is some very obvious emotion there, as you know, Cody's the younger brother. And everything that comes with that. I would have liked to have seen a bit more build to this match, just because it was sort of like a week or 2 weeks, and it was a bit incongruous because it felt like Cody and Dustin were building two different matches, but it came together as a sort of masterpiece of a match. The emotion was there, the intensity was there.
Part of why it succeeded so well is that I feel like expectation levels were not particularly high going into it. I don't think anyone was expecting anything above like a 3.5-star match, and the standard that they performed at was just incredibly high, and there was a lot of emotion involved in it. And when you have like an emotional attachment, it just, the match always feels more important, and it felt really important.
Yeah, the actual work in the match, I think, was, if we're completely honest, wasn't anything super special. It's not on the level of Ospreay Shingo.
No, but it was good enough.
It was good enough. It was good enough to be talked about as a match of the year, but it wasn't like, you know, blow away amazing. Whereas that emotion and just the visuals from all of the blood really took it over the top.
I feel it's weird that WWE haven't had anything really worth talking about. There's been a couple of matches off takeovers. I really like the one Mania weekend, which is the War Raiders against Ricochet and Aleister Black.
Yeah, that's a match that I don't think gets talked about enough. Because
I was blown away by that at the time.
I was too, and it's in my top 10 of the year. But I just don't, for some reason, no one's talking about it. Yeah. Everyone is more interested in that terrible Cole Gargano match.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's not even Gargano's best match of the year. He had that one with Ricochet in January that was great.
Yeah, another. Ricochet's had a couple matches like that, which are sort of forgotten as to how good they really were.
Yeah, you just assume that he's going to be good. And I think that's the benefit sometimes of not being a particularly great wrestler, but being able to put together a great match, is that the expectation levels are often a lot lower for you, so you can kind of blow people away easier, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, it does. That War Raiders tag from WrestleMania weekend might be one of my favourite tag matches of this year.
If it's not my favourite, it's second. I think it's that one, or I don't know if you saw it, the Walter tag match from when he went to Big Japan.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
As him and basically, the Walter that we all kind of imagine is the one that should happen, the one where he just kind of kills people and every moment is really intense.
The one from like 2018.
like he had a bunch of those matches, and then he went to into the WWE system, and he just doesn't have them anymore. This was one of those matches. Everyone was like chopped to pieces, and it was him and Sekimoto against Okabayashi and Hino, and oh, it was so good. It was just like, this is like my shit, completely my shit. I loved it.
You said there's no real WWE matches. I think you can make an argument for Brian Kingston from WrestleMania.
Yeah, I liked that, but I was quite unwell while I was watching it, and it just kind of didn't really connect.
I think it's a similar match to Cody Dustin in that the work was at a very, very high level, but it's the emotion which really took it over the top. I think it's one of the few times where something has got organically over in WWE and they've been able to capitalize it on it properly.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't give him a particularly good title reign. I think that's probably why I'm not really as fond on it looking back. That, and I was ill at the time. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I think his title run was bad. But I think it was more about the story leading up to the title run. He could have lost the title literally the next day, and I would have still been really, really high.
What they actually did with him was just limp title run, and then it just kind of went on for ages, nothing happened, and then he got squashed.
I think what ended up happening is they knew they would SmackDown was going to Fox at some point in the year. And they just thought, look, we'll leave the title on Kingston for now. And then when we go on to Fox, we'll put it on a bigger name, which is what ended up happening. There is one or two Lucha matches. I don't know. I know one of them you've definitely seen.
Was it Laredo Kid versus El Higo del Vikingo from June in Triple R?
No, but that was an incredible match as well.
That was my favourite Lucha match of the year.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It's a match that sort of really made Laredo Kid into a star. He's a guy that's been very good for a while.
That was very gifts, that match was.
Yeah, it was great. I would like to see Vikingo do more non-high-flying stuff, see what more there is to his game. But he's very, very good at the high flying. And that match was basically just non-stop action.
It was nuts. I really enjoyed that.
It was crazy. I don't think it quite gets to match of the year level.
Not quite. It's not in my top 10, but it's very close.
Yeah. I could see someone putting it at 10, but it's not on mine.
It might make it in when I do one for Voices of Wrestling, which I don't include the same wrestler twice and I don't include the same promotion twice. It will probably get into that top 10.
Yeah, I can see that. The one I know you've watched was Ultimo Guerrero Kai Fan, which I made you watch.
Was that the one where the floor's all like dirt and they just bleed all over the place?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that was great.
So, a bit of background on this match. Ultimo Guerrero, obviously, huge, huge name in Lucha Libre. Kai Fan is a bit more of like a local hero. And so what ends up happening is you have this veteran come into this dirt hole and beat the crap out of their local legend. And the way it's filmed, because it's a handheld film, it's a handheld recording, the way it's filmed makes it seem like I feel like I needed a shower after watching it. It was just really, really seedy, but in a good way.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that match. It kind of starts and isn't the first move like a kick to the nuts or something? And then like,
yeah,
one of them, I can't remember which one, one of them's like busted wide open inside a minute. And it's like
Kai
a Fan. Proper gusher as well. There's blood everywhere, and
there's like pools of blood on the chairs.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is a visual.
Sickening.
Which is a visual that's I'm never gonna forget.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. More of that in 2020. More dirty lucha with the mass bloodshed.
It's great. I've got a couple other more matches worth talking about, but why don't you rattle some off?
I can go through some of the Japanese stuff that I really enjoyed that maybe hasn't gotten out to a wider audience. I mentioned him earlier, Shotaro Ishino, from Wrestle1. He is such a good wrestler. Like his all-round game is just incredible. He had a match way back in January against T-Hawk that I thought was just completely outstanding. What else? Oh, Pac and Casey from Dragon Gate. I thought this was Pac's best match of the year, which is saying something. His standard has been really consistently high. Yeah, that was great. Casey is not really known for hitting those highs either, so I really enjoyed
He
that.
has a couple. He does it like maybe once or twice a year. He'll have
Yeah,
one really, really great
when
match.
I think of Dragon Gate and like if I was going to rank their wrestlers, he'd probably be in the bottom half somewhere. But when he turns up, it's just like, wow. Also going to give a shout out to Shinjiro Otani. His match with Koi Sato from Zero One's 18th anniversary show in March was tremendous. Yuji Okabayashi and Dillon James from Champion Carnival, the one that went to a 30-minute draw, and it was basically just them hitting each other for 30 minutes.
I
That was
didn't like
gold.
that match as much as other people. I remember Alan Farrell
Alan loved it.
specifically.
Loved it to
Yeah.
bits, yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but I felt like it wasn't as high action as I was expecting. It felt a bit, it might be a match I need to
But
rewatch.
it's literally 30 minutes and they
Yeah.
don't stop hitting each other for 30 minutes. It's just constant like chops and abuse. So yeah, I really appreciate how hard they both worked in that match because going that hard for 30 minutes is difficult.
Yeah, it felt a bit overly long to me, but I'll accept it might be a match I need to
Yeah,
rewatch
they just kind
just
of wore
because.
each other down.
Yeah. What else? Let me look through my list. Blue Demon Jr., Ray Wagner Jr. from TripleMania this year.
Wasn't that another one where they just bled all over the place?
Yeah, it was.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Blue Demon pulled out a hammer at one point.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Wasn't there like a stone block or something in that match?
Was a concrete block. That was the
Yeah.
finish. I think Suzuki Barnett from WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, that's on my list. My favorite Takeda match this year, we haven't even mentioned Masashi Takeda, who had such a great 2018. My favorite match of his this year was against Jimmy Lloyd on
I wanted to talk about that because
yeah,
I
the
think
Spring Break one.
that might be one of the, it's maybe not one of the best matches from WrestleMania weekend this year, but it's the most memorable.
It
That
was up there.
scissor spot I will think about for the rest of my life.
Yeah. When you that scissor spot. So basically, you got was it a board with scissors? And
Yeah.
yeah, Takeda basically does a double knees into the board, and it's on top of Jimmy Lloyd. And Jimmy Lloyd knows immediately that he's just been stabbed by a pair of scissors, and he checks real quick to make sure it hasn't stabbed him in the carotid artery, and he's about to bleed out. And it hasn't. It kind of got him in the top of the chest. But like, there's a moment there where he's like, "Oh, this is it."
I legitimately might be
I'm
dead.
about to die.
Yeah.
And the moment where he just checks it and then he's like, he's okay, it's a couple of seconds of real human drama there. I mean, I'm laughing about it. He could have died, but this is deathmatch wrestling. It's like you can't go into it expecting safety, which is kind of what puts it on the edge of excitement when it comes to watching wrestling, because it's just like you don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that whole match was work at a really fast pace as well. It's talked about a lot with Takeda matches, but it almost felt like a G1 match, but with weapons.
Yeah. He's very good at that.
Phenomenal stuff. Tyler Bate Walter from TakeOver,
I actually haven't
a
seen
match
that.
I haven't seen it either, but I feel like I refuse to watch NXT UK, but it's a match we have to just mention as, hey, people thought this was really good. It might be really good.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
We'll never know. We'll never know.
It's like 40 minutes long. I just don't want to watch it.
Yeah, fuck. I still have flashbacks from that Pete Dunne, Joe Coffey match from the first takeover. Awful. Yeah. The match that exposed Pete Dunne is not a good worker in my eyes.
Yeah, it's not even his fault. It's just had such a terrible match because Joe Coffey stinks.
Yeah.
Who looks at Joe Coffey and goes, oh, let's put him in a 30-minute match? I'm like, I want him in and out of there as quick as possible.
I like Joe Coffey more than most people, but he's not suited to that kind of match.
No.
He was completely exposed. Pete Dunne was completely exposed. That entire brand was completely exposed.
Which is unfortunate, because the match that started that show, the Mustache Mountain and Grizzled Young Vet, was one of the best matches that took place in Europe this year, and probably should have been like the kick-starting point for NXT UK to become something good. And then by the end of the show, everyone's like, oh, yeah, it sucks now.
Yeah, that was another just incredible takeover tag match. If someone had that in a top 10 for the year, I wouldn't go insane.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. It's in my top 10 European matches, because I do a separate top 10 for Europe for the for when we talk about it on the BritWrest Roundtable. So that is in my top 10. For that,
yeah,
but it's not okay. Overall.
Fair. I know we've rattled through them quite quick, but I think I've at least mentioned all of the matches I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've pretty much cleared everything. Obviously, Starr and Devlin. I don't think we actually mentioned that in terms of match of the year contention, but it's in my top 10.
The fifth anniversary one, yeah, has to be, if not your number one or number two, in your top three, I would say. Just the whole story. We've already talked about it, but the whole story, The work was so, so good. They've had a trilogy of matches this year, and it really felt like a payoff of that trilogy.
Yeah, that's the European match of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I don't think anything else is particularly close to that. I had... Volta and Phoenix from Carrot Weekend would probably be close-ish, but not really. The Volta Star match where Star lost again, and obviously the Volta Devlin match to complete the trilogy of matches they did this year. But like, I don't think anything else was particularly close. And Star and Devlin easily was European match of the year.
Yeah, I think just from the story point alone, nothing can touch it.
Yeah. When I do my Voices of Wrestling top 10, that will probably be at 2, because I can't vote for 2 Will Ospreay matches based on my criteria. So like, that would probably be 2.
Fair. I think let's quickly talk promotion.
Yeah, I guess New Japan.
Yeah, I don't feel right about it either, but
it's not been one of these years where I think New Japan is so good I can't not vote for it. It's just they have been consistently really good. They haven't been consistently excellent like they have been in previous years, but if you kind of go flicking through all the matches they've had in that promotion this year, it's the matches are fine. It's just because the booking hasn't been like as exhilarating as it has been in previous years. And I think a lot of that is to do with Omega just dropping out of the company at the start of the year. And it just kind of, they've had to piece it together since then. And it's just, I think they've missed out on a lot of what would have been great moments because he's not been there. And obviously he's not been great in AEW either. So it's not been a good year for Kenny Omega.
It's shocking that we didn't even mention Kenny Omega for Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah, I don't think he's been particularly good.
No, he's been pretty bad, I would say. I think New Japan has had a very clear sort of rebuilding year this year. They have had this before when AJ Styles and Nakamura and Gallows and Anderson left. They were lucky that year because Tanahashi was still working at a high level. Okada was on the rise. You had Omega on the rise. So while it was a rebuilding year, it didn't feel as much of a rebuilding year.
Yeah,
Whereas this year, you can really tell.
The gaps at the top have been more obvious this year. Normally, they've traditionally, over the past like 3-4 years, they've basically just slotted Tanahashi back in there somewhere. And he's been actually so injured that he can't do that this year, which it's the first time that it's really been obvious that there is an issue there. But they have a lot of strength in depth, which has kind of compensated for it. So, yeah, I just about edge New Japan's promotion of the year. I would probably give shout-outs to OTT for their booking. But underneath their main events, I don't think they've had the quality and the depth that you could point to in New Japan and say there's a lot of quality up and down that card. With OTT, I think they've had some decent matches off the top, but most of the main events have been where it's at.
I think with OTT, you can tell there's a lot of talent below the main event, but it's a lot of guys who maybe in a year or two are going to be really, really great, and right now are just sort of chugging along. Like, I really like More Than Hype. I really like Scotty Davis. All of these people are really, really good, but I think they're maybe a year away from being exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I think we have to talk about AEW. I've now completely caught up with everything, and I think there's very, very clear issues in the booking. The match quality is falling off for me as well. I think the bloom is off the rose a little bit with AEW for me. I'm going to keep watching it just because it's a very relevant and important company. But I would hesitate to even really place them in the top three.
I'm going to watch some of their stuff in January. But I look forward to their big events, I guess. It would be fair to say.
Yeah. But it's not a company you're going to be following week to week.
No, well, I don't follow any company week to week.
Fair.
I'd like to give a shout out to GCW for the sheer variety of shows that they've managed to put out this year. They are the stars of Mania Weekend every year. I think they've been a little bit inconsistent outside of that, so they're probably not really in the conversation, but they're worth a shout out.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years I've really talked about GCW as a promotion of the year. I think they've had a few issues this year. I haven't liked the way they've booked the world title, where it was basically just Nick Gage and a bunch of freak show matches up until this Ricky Shane Page angle happened. Did you know they have tag titles which haven't been defended in the US all year? The champions aren't allowed back in the US, I think. So they're in Mexico and Japan. Did you know they have a secondary title, which is on PCO? And PCO, I don't think, has worked a GCW show all year.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I like the cool sort of tentpole variety shows they have. But, again, there's some booking issues which I would like cleaned up if I'm talking about something as promotion of the year.
Yeah. But I thought I'd give them a shout out.
Yeah. I want to mention Riptide, because I think Riptide has had a very, very strong year. I've been following them since they started, and for a while they were sort of churning along with these more traditional undercard Brit rest guys like the Spike Treve or Chuck Mambo. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So they were sort of churning along with these low-level guys. And then this year, it feels like everything has come together. There's a lot of stories that sort of been humming away, not exceptional, but not bad, just sort of going. And then it's all blossomed this year, and the Money Lessons Everybody story is really, really good. It's a shame that Jack Sexsmith didn't get to finish his angle there, because I think they were booking Jack better than anyone in the country. That's the Cara Noir. I think Cara Noir sort of became a thing because of Riptide. They've been giving him showcase matches for a little while, and then that PAC match happened, and he became a star off of the back of it.
Yeah, which is long overdue. I've been saying for a couple of years now that I don't understand why people aren't booking him, and now he's getting booked everywhere, so job done.
Yeah, I think I saw him live for the first time in Lucha Forever, so that dates it to whatever year Lucha Forever was around. And he was clearly a star at that point.
Well, Rev Pro were booking him then as well. I don't understand what happened.
I think at that time, the gimmick was a little bit... It needed a few tweaks. He hasn't done much to it, but I think it was still not quite perfect. And also, it was just the fact that there were more people at the top end.
I just realised that I didn't mention my favourite match this year. It's probably not match of the year, but it's the match with Cara Noir and Shigehiro Irie, where he threw him into the wall at the Rezgal.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that match at the time.
I probably talked to everyone about it at length. Because it's great.
Phenomenal. What promotion was that for?
Southside, actually.
Okay. Okay.
It might show up on like Rev Pro's on demand at some point.
Who knows? Maybe never.
Maybe never, but I don't care. I was there. I saw it.
I think that's all I really have to talk about for promotion of the year.
Unless you want to give a shout out to Zona 23, because I know I do.
You know, I haven't had IWTV for most of this year, so I haven't got to watch as much Zona 23 as I want. But please, take the lead.
They're just great. So someone recommended me as, I've actually said on Twitter, like, are there any promotions that like don't get reviewed that you'd like to see reviewed? And somebody said Zona 23. And I had vaguely heard of it, but I didn't really know what it was about. I just thought it was like a deathmatch promotion, which it kind of is. But they wrestle in a junkyard in Mexico. And there's just like the ring is in the middle of the junkyard, and they do loads of spots onto cars and off like vans. And I love it. It's so good. I really want them to do a show at Mania weekend, because everyone would be just raving about Zona 23.
But, you know, I think it would lose a lot of its appeal if it was
It needs to be in a junkyard at Mania somewhere. Where's Mania at this year? Is it
Tampa?
Tampa or... Yeah. They need to find, like, a junkyard in Tampa and do it there.
Yeah. And all of the wrestlers are, like, out of shape old luchadors, and it's so good. It's so good.
There are not really any good wrestlers in this promotion. You're not going to go and see a bunch of like 4.5-star matches out of them, but it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I think I was the one that was at the very least talking up Zona 23 to you. And yeah, what a great company.
Yeah.
I legitimately might get IWTV now just to go watch Zona 23.
Yeah, New Year, more Zona 23. I definitely want to watch them, like, to a decent degree this year.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, two shows, but they were great.
There's, like, a dozen, I think, on IWTV now. So that's going to be fun.
That's an ideal place to finish, because, like, how do you top Zona 23?
How do you top Zona 23?
I don't think you can.
No. Plugs.
Well, you're on the website, which is arnoldfurious.com. I keep wanting to say Furious Rage, but that was like 15 years ago. So yeah,
Got
that's
it
it.
wrong.
I'm at Arnold Furious on the Twitter.
I'm at Akil K94 on the Twitter. I do nothing else. Bye.
Happy New Year.